Okay, everybody. Hi. And we're beginning with externalization of the hierarchy, program 50. And today is the 20th of May. I almost said 2020. And we're beginning on page 464. So it's my hope that you can hear me and that we can move forward. The Buddha, whose festival is held at every full moon of May or of Taurus, falling this year during the last week of April, acts today as the agent of the great life in whom we live and move and have our being. And let us call this Sanat Kumara, or the planetary logos, who is himself the true light of the world. Okay. I'm just trying to time all this out, you know. I've got all these contraptions here. He is himself the true light of the world and the planetary enlightener. You know, he's the greatest example of the teaching ray upon our planet. So, as I said, usually this is held in tropical Taurus. And the last week of April is certainly tropical Taurus. It is not sidereal Taurus. So let us emphasize this word enlightener, because that's what he is. He is that. I refer to the Ancient of Days, as he is called in the Old Testament, to the God of love, to whom the Christ prayed, and to Sanat Kumara, the eternal youth, the one who holds all men in life, and who is carrying his whole creation along the path of evolution to its consummation, a consummation of which we have not as yet the faintest idea. So if we don't know where this whole planetary development is heading, the Tibetan includes himself among those who have not the slightest idea of what that consummation is. Shall we call Sanat Kumara the planetary logos? Sometimes we do. Shall we call him the soul of the planetary logos? Sometimes we do. A combination of soul and personality of the planetary logos, an emanation of the planetary logos. Sometimes we do. So we have simply to look at the context. And I think what I'll do is bring this over to this side. And I believe, okay. Year after year, ever since the Buddha achieved his goal of illumination, it was the sixth degree, with a cosmic touch, the touch of the cosmic mental plane. After he achieved his goal of illumination, an effort has been made to increase the flow of enlightenment into the world and to throw the light of wisdom, that's the Buddha's particular light, experience and understanding, as it is called, into the minds of men. So following that illumination and following the choice of the Buddha, his choice to remain with humanity and to remain on this planet, which DK actually says was not his path at all. But he chose, thus he chose, and the light has been increasing ever since then. At each full moon of May, that includes the whole of May, so pretty much except for the end, it is therefore tropical, measured from the vernal equinox, and not from a point in sidereal space. At each full moon of May, this has been the effort of the spiritual forces which are working out the will of God. A supreme effort will be made by them at this year. During the 5 days of the full moon, April 25th through 30th, that is definitely tropical Taurus, and a major test of the effectiveness of their activity will be given at the San Francisco conference, which was part and parcel of the founding of the United Nations and the creation of its headquarters later in New York. This I would ask you to remember, and for this I beg you to mobilize. Notice he says the 5 days of the full moon. It could be 7 days, but in this particular case, he's using the pentagram. A great triangle of force will be called into play during these 5 days as the nucleus through which the forces of enlightenment will work. The three lives controlling the energy, which it is hoped can be released for the illumining of men's minds. You know, there was such hope following the Second World War, or, you know, toward the end there. And it was the time of the defeat of Germany. What was it, that surrender? Was it May 8th, approximately? Maybe it was May 8th. And later came Japan's surrender after the August 6th dropping of the atomic bomb. So, the three lives controlling the energy, which are illumining men's minds, or it is hoped will, the Lord of the world, the light of life itself. Now, this is interesting because sometimes Aries is called the light of life itself, Taurus, sometimes it's even Pisces, the light of life. Let's see if I have anything here that indicates that. I'm not sure what you're going to see right now, but I'm going to turn to esoteric astrology, and I'm going to check it out on page 332. Yes, the light of life, Taurus, is called that. And we do see that happening in Aries, and I recall that even in Pisces, it did present itself that way. So the Lord of the world is one, the Buddha, the Lord of wisdom, bringing spiritual light to the hierarchy, and revealing what is the divine purpose. And then, number three, the Christ, the Lord of love, presenting the demand of humanity, you know, working from below upwards in a way, and acting as the distributing agent of the forces of enlightenment, so working from above as well. Three great lives will be active, or have been active at that time of the meeting in San Francisco in 1945. The forces of light upon the physical plane, I assume that's the allied forces, have driven the forces of evil and of darkness backwards and are bringing the war to an end through the defeat of the Axis nations. And we're told that it had to be an unconditional surrender. Unconditional. I recall the excellent movie about Lincoln, with Daniel Day-Lewis playing the major part. And toward the end of the Civil War, a delegation from the South came to sue for a conditional surrender. And Lincoln would not allow that, and he was correct again. Because if you leave the seed, then it can again germinate. And we notice that neither the forces of Japan nor Germany, and certainly not Italy, have re-germinated since the conclusion of the war. Of course, there in Italy, the partisans took over the country and drove Mussolini and his fascists out. Okay, page 465. But another great division of those forces, if I may, you know, symbolically use the military term. Yeah. Is being mobilized and can be brought into active service at the full moon of May. Taurus, if the demand is strong enough, it is mentally powerful and adequately focused, and these forces work entirely upon the level of the mind. And with the minds of men, it is there, I think we're talking about the forces of enlightenment here. It is their task to bring the battle between the forces of light and the forces of darkness to an end, not only physically, but through the inauguration of an era of right thinking. So these forces, perhaps, were instrumental in bringing the unconditional surrender of Germany. I'm going to go with May 8th here. Bringing that to completion, and later Japan, perhaps. This will end the present cycle of emotional distress, of agony, of glamour and illusion, and of materialistic desires which today form the pattern of men's lives. And I guess we can say that enlightenment will end this. Okay, I'm just going to put that here. So, enlightenment. will end the materialistic patterns. Well, certainly it was a time of great hope and celebration, but you have to be so careful that you don't walk away and turn your back on those very pernicious forces which always look for a way to get back in. Okay. So that is possible, or was possible. I suppose it did occur. Another great division of these forces. Maybe the forces of enlightenment is what we're talking about in general, but a division of the forces of enlightenment. This will end that present cycle. One can only imagine what it was like to live through that, and probably some of us have lived through it with all of these debilitating states, agony, distress, glamour, illusion, materialistic desire, etc. This has to be done by means of the spiritual will, working as enlightenment upon the mental plane and demonstrating wisdom as wisdom and as skill in action motivated by love and understanding. So the will is translated into these other desirable states. The spiritual will coming from the monad, coming from Atma, and Atmic plane, interestingly, is a kind of a mental plane, and it works out as mental light on our customary mental plane. But it's part of the triad, and so wisdom is there. And skill in action, probably expressed through the seventh ray, the reflection of the first, and motivated by buddhi. These three aspects of light, mental enlightenment, the illumination which wisdom confers, and loving understanding, mental enlightenment, you know, I have to be careful there. I had an E to transport, and forgot about it. So mental enlightenment as a result of spiritual will, and the illumination which wisdom confers, and loving understanding all find their perfect expression in the Lord of the world, whom the Orthodox call God. And in his reflections, the Buddha and the Christ, interesting to call them reflections, the one who brought illumination to the world and the other who demonstrated the actuality of the love of God, not just theoretically. So here we have indeed, a different perspective. Once again, mental enlightenment resulting from spiritual will, from the atmic plane, another kind of mental plane. 1, 2, 3, it's a mental plane. 5 is a mental plane. The illumination which wisdom confers, this is a Buddhic factor, and so is loving understanding, all from the triad, or, you know, possibly in certain cases from the monad, which the triad reflects. and all find their perfect expression in God and his reflections, whatever that means, is the Christ and the Buddha as his reflections. Certainly they are in the council of the great Lord. So interesting that when prayers fly up to God, they are really rising to Sanat Kumara. These three great expressions of divinity, one so divine that we can only know him through his representatives, Christ and the Buddha, except if one is a very high initiate, can be called into a new and most potent activity through the right invocation at the time of the full moon of May. Indeed, it was a celebratory time. The forces of light had won through. And the way was clear, at least for a while. Progressively, the way became more obstructed. And the great danger of sweeping one's house clear of demons only to have more return, because maybe of overconfidence, we might say, of ignoring the danger, that did take place. And, you know, and today we have a great rebellion against the forces of light. Those who can carry out this great act of invocation are spiritually minded people everywhere. The enlightened statesmen, the religious leaders, and the men and women of goodwill, if they stand with massed intent, it's so Vulcanian, particularly throughout the entire month of April, which includes tropical Aries. So he's telling, you know, he's giving advance warning of what could be achieved if his students, the spiritually minded people that he can reach, follow instructions. Their assistance can also be invoked by the dire need of men, women, and children everywhere who can voice no cry, for they know not where to turn, but whose appeal is heard and noted. And interesting, when the Lords of Liberation came forth at the end of 1942 and beginning of 1943, it was this inchoate cry that was part of that stream of energy from humanity, which reached them and was of sufficient strength to make it possible for them to respond. Isn't it amazing how many spiritual forces were involved in this war? Really, behind the scenes, unknown. Oh, the United States won the war, Russia won the war, together they won the war, the Allies won the war. Yes, but all in response to the extremely attentive spiritual forces, which did everything they could lawfully do, lawfully, to ensure the winning of the war, which would make possible the right entry into the Aquarian Age, the reappearance of the Christ. Actually, this is a time, too, when the Christ had decided that he would appear in bodily form. I think there was a decision made in 1943, another decision in 1945. Just how amazingly active these great representatives of the light the love, the understanding were at this time to help humanity prevail over its enemies. Okay, so this is a high form of assistance. High powers. Their work, however, must be focused through and implemented by the world intelligentsia, by leading lovers of humanity working in the various organizations and groups dedicated to human betterment, you know, ever since 1825. The number of such groups has grown remarkably, and by representative unselfish people. I suppose the men and women of good will. So humanity has its role, and let's just say hierarchy cannot do this alone. Okay, let me do this correctly. Humanity cannot do this alone, but hierarchy assists if humanity will respond to hierarchical impulse. It is they who must receive the inflow of lighted wisdom and of loving understanding. Humanity must receive this. It's against the law to violate the freedom of humanity and impose the good, because as DK said, nothing would be gained and we'd be back in the same situation later. Unless humanity works out by itself what is within the scope of its possibilities. It is they. Okay. And let's just put that down. Humanity, who must receive the inflow of lighted wisdom and of loving understanding, and of the great illumination, what have we? Enlightenment, mental enlightenment, the illumination which wisdom confers, and loving understanding. And I think we have to make that a little bigger so it can be pointed out. Excuse me. Enlightenment, mental enlightenment, lighted wisdom, and loving understanding. Well, we must again rate ourselves regarding the degree to which we have and are expressing these beneficent results of response to the hierarchy. Today, this can be made possible in a manner never known before. Great opportunity lay before humanity at that time, and probably again, though in a more subtle way, the struggle is very fierce and has been raised to the psychological level. The success of the effort now being spiritually planned is dependent upon the ability of mankind to use the light they already have. In that light, we shall see light, right? In order to establish right human relations, in their families, in their communities, in their nation, and in the world. So we don't want to think ever that God the Father, Sanat Kumara, the emanation of the Father, will do this all themselves and violate the Syrian law of freedom. The matter of being in a position to receive and then be the agents of enlightenment is an intensely practical matter. It is hoped, we face it today. There's been an attempt to cover the great light, and the consciousness movement faded into the practicalities of money manipulation and a regression into materialism, perhaps starting in the 1980s. Whereas the consciousness movement moved powerfully through at least half of the 60s or many years in the 60s and through the 1970s, depending upon where you were on the globe in the world. It is hoped that the response will be so real that it will constitute a great and uniform activity which will leave no single thinking person untouched, which will put the responsibility of establishing right human relations upon the shoulders of the men and women of goodwill and not on the shoulders of the unthinking, undeveloped, and suffering masses. Even now in America, which has recently, maybe within the last century or so, hosted the arrival of souls of lesser attainment. And they do not have the responsibility. The thinking people have the responsibility to receive and act as agents of enlightenment. Are we light bearers? Are we agents of enlightenment? Do we carry the light? Do we spread the light? Do we think the light? Even if we might not be saying anything to the people we're with, are they somehow a little more enlightened because we have had contact with them? That doesn't mean that we're anything remarkable, but we have at least an exposure to the light. And that exposure is very important. So this is a major point to bear in mind. If the thinking and executive people of the world, you know, the actors in control, can have their minds illumined by the spirit of wisdom and understanding, loving understanding, they can act as distributors of that light through enlightened planning and legislation and thus affect the entire world. Now, our so many congresses at the moment have disintegrated into a state of bitter partisanship, in which the welfare of the country concerned is hardly the main objective. Winning is the main objective, being in power and perhaps enriching oneself. This is not limited to the first family, which out of all character with the presidency enriches itself. By using an impersonal office for personal gain. But the senators do the same, and the congresspeople. I speak now for the United States when you're in such a position, whether it is through an understanding of what moves and will be made and laws will be made and taking advantage of those things and their effect upon the stock market, whether it's that or some other pre-information which places one in a favorable position to enrich oneself, it is a great abuse to take such a position and think in merely personal terms. So this is the immediate opportunity ahead, and when I say immediate, I refer to the coming 5 days of the Waysak Festival. So DK is really trying to mobilize people for practical action at this time. This should have a pronounced effect upon the San Francisco conference, which really, you know, was the launching of an effective United Nations beyond the capability of the League of Nations, which failed in the face of aggression. I also refer to the next 5 years with their Waysak festivals on 5 May moons. And maybe they are May full moons, all of them. I'd have to look that up. The one we seem to be talking about here was an April full moon in 1945. I believe so. I don't think I'm going to during the 5 days of the full moon, April 25th to April 30th, that's definitely in tropical Taurus in the year 1945. So much movement behind the scenes of these higher powers. This should have a, so basically what we do spiritually, as we have been told many times, has the effect, a pronounced effect upon the success of outer precipitations, such as this seminal conference. And I guess he's looked ahead to the 5 years, 46, 47, 48, 49, 50. 1950 also an important year, 75 years from 1875, and the beginning of the temporary negating of the power of the fifth ray ashram on its own. I wonder if that was known at this time. Things were getting ahead of themselves. Now we have laser weapons. When I was a kid, I used to love to see the Flash Gordon series, and they were always using lasers, you know. It was something, I think, that was filmed in the 1930s, and the enemy was an Oriental, Ming the Merciless. It didn't specify, you know, any particular nation, but it was enough to suggest that a conflict was building. And laser weapons, of course, are very primitive compared to what we can do now, those films, but the laser was active. And you can imagine that the weaponry which an uncontrolled fifth ray group could produce. The Germans were rather close, but the Lords of Liberation deflected the solutions from their demanding minds, because the Lords of Liberation were invoked by humanity in its knowledgeable and inchoate states, and they responded justifiably, whereas they could not have had they not been invoked. So, year by year, since he left the earth, okay, well, this year will mark a climaxing effort in the long series of the, in the long relation of the Buddha to humanity. Well, 1945, and in 1946, we have that well-known Waysack message of 1946, when the idea of the Buddha having perhaps a few more decades, was brought forward. Exactly what the modus operandi would be if the Buddha no longer came to the Waysack Valley. We do not know, but we do know that as a member of the triangle surrounding the Christ, the Buddha's influence would be powerful. And his cooperation with the Christ during the Aquarian Age, an ongoing redemptive factor for humanity. Year by year, since he left the earth, or, you know, the outer plane, he has come back to humanity, bringing light and blessing. Year by year, he has released this light and has presented opportunity to the forces of enlightenment to strengthen their hold upon the minds of men. And remember, these forces are very high. When he describes in Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 2, the forces of light, one gets the impression that they are very high beings, probably shambolic beings. Their hold upon the minds of men, that's being strengthened. The success of their effort has been so great that it led to the crescendo of knowledge, to the glory of modern science, and the widespread education which has distinguished the past 500 years. I think, you know, Virgo, it's the age we've been passing through of Pisces Virgo. Virgo has a part to play with its exalted ruler, Mercury, representing that sign. The forces of enlightenment have been at work. We've even had a movement in Europe that we called the Enlightenment, and with in which the worst fables of churchianity were exposed, and an age of reason entered. Yes, we lost something in the age of reason, perhaps, but by and large, those reasonable individuals of the 17th century, let us say, were believers, and never wrote God out of the equation the way many modern scientists tend to do. Well, that would be Master Hilarion's job, to get the scientists and the sensitives back together. And he is equipped to do that with such a powerful fifth ray, and also this factor of his Buddhic attainment. He's written some of the most lovely prayers and statements and mantra. He had both. So here we have the force of enlightenment, opportunity for the forces of enlightenment. So there's been a great success of the forces of enlightenment. And Master R, you know, as Francis Bacon helped to sound that note, don't just dream it up in an ecclesiastical manner, but put it to the test. And he brought in a very strong wave of the fifth ray observational, experimental, and testing nature. So this has been the glory of modern science and a widespread, relatively, education has been distinguished, which has distinguished the past 500 years. I mean, now what is said every 5 or 6 kilometers, there will be a computer. So the younger souls of the world will not be very far from a computer at any time, and they can take advantage of it. Knowledge, presumably Ray 5, is the highlight, is the hallmark of our civilization. It has often been knowledge misapplied, as the maybe Vulcanians and some Mercurians have done without the opening of the second petal, for which opening they came to Earth. It has often been knowledge applied, misapplied, and dedicated to the selfishness of men, very much in the hall of ignorance, which doesn't mean that people can't be intelligent in that hall, but that they are not aware of the higher of the pairs of opposites. But it has been an impersonal thing, personally applied. The personality is a great instrument and a very, we say, the mind makes a good servant and a poor master, and the personality is pretty much the same factor and becomes at length the highly trained dweller on the threshold, which should be instrumental in helping the inner soul work out its plans, but can instead block that soul from expression. This is all a battle fought out in the fifth petal of the egoic lotus, before the possibility of the aspirational probationary phase enters, and before the first initiation can be taken. Anyway, it's been an impersonal thing, personally applied. It has been selfish. The members of the Black Lodge are extremely intelligent in the sense of knowledge, perhaps not wisdom. They don't really have the Buddhi. And they have raised the powers of the concrete mind to an extent which would astonish humanity. The Tibetan has told us about this. And they proceed along a Devic line of development, and never can take the Syrian path of initiation. They cannot venture towards the cosmic Christ, which is one of the names that Sirius has. So this personal application, this must end. The personal application, this must end. Now, another phase of that light can begin to demonstrate as the result of the past, and that is wisdom. So we have this great enlightenment of the mind, and we have wisdom and understanding, much more Buddhic From the mind alone, you do not have this. Wisdom is an enlightened application of knowledge through love to the affairs of men. What a great definition. It is understanding pouring out everywhere as the result of experience. Well, this would be a good one to remember, would it not? I think so. So, in the Hall of Ignorance, it's possible to be relatively knowledgeable, but I would say never really wise. I call you, therefore, everyone, to a great service of demand and of invocation on behalf of humanity, a demand for the inflow of light upon the decisions of men, real knowledge. When you have a person in extremely high power and place suggesting that people have detergent injected into their lungs to clean away a viral infection, realize, wait, something is really wrong here. And there is no wisdom. One has failed to learn from experience anything that would benefit the whole of humanity and not just benefit oneself. I would ask you to request and expect the needed enlightenment for those who have to make decision on behalf of men everywhere. Yes, may the light come, and may those who have at least some measure of light see a greater light in the light they already have. May it be so. Even though people are so astonishingly selfish, and especially narcissistic leaders, of which there are a number today, that they simply reject the enlightenment, the wisdom, the loving understanding. These things do not contribute to personal power. And so, they are dismissed. So your individual enlightenment has nothing to do with this demand. It is a selfish motive which is required and which must lie behind you, your individual and group demand. So at first we consider our personalities. May they be enlightened. And we do not realize that in asking that, we are dealing, well, it's a good motive in a way, but it's a selfish motive still. It's a selfless motive, if I didn't say that, which is required. I said selfish, I meant that it was in the past, but I misread that word. It is a selfless motive which is required and which must lie behind your individual group demand. And this means we begin to identify as a group. Rather than simply as a greedy personality. You can be greedy for many things. You can be greedy not just for money, but for appreciation and for recognition and for power. You know, any of the prerogatives of the personality, one can attach a certain greed to them. You are demanding enlightenment and illumined perception for those who have to guide the destiny of the races, nations, and world groups. You are demanding this. And when we pray and when we meditate, we don't forget the other for on whose behalf we are really working. I remember being very far north in a city called Tromsø, Norway, which has in it the most northern university in the world, I believe. And there's a convent there that Tuya and I like to visit because they have some beautiful chanting and music they have. And it's called Totus Tuus, and it means all for you. And it means that these people have given themselves entirely for the other, which is the same case as the Christ has done. Okay. So the people who guide the destiny of the races, nations, and world groups in general, they are disciples or even initiates in possibly. And they are stronger disciples than we are. The Tibetan always warned in another way against trying to contact the leaders of Germany and so forth because they were stronger than the disciple and could, in a way, overcome the disciple. We have to be careful what we try to contact, and certainly not members of the Black Lodge, because we're told about them that to pursue knowledge of them is both fruitless, futile, and dangerous. So for these leaders, we want to strengthen the good leaders. We have to identify them, of course. We have to subject their approaches to the test of selflessness. And where we see a marked selfishness, we cannot engage in anything that promotes their continued leadership. So for these enlightened ones, on their shoulders lies the responsibility to take wise action based on world understanding in the interests of international cooperation and in the establishment of right human relations. Well, how many leaders today are like that? Really? How many? And I would say, you know, very few. During the war, FDR was that way. That doesn't mean he was a perfect representative of anything, but he was an outstanding disciple. Churchill was that way, even though he was gruff and rough, and people may not have liked his impact personally. Earlier, DK tells us about Ataturk and his disinterested use of the Shambhala force. Okay. There were some. Nelson Mandela more recently. He may have begun as a revolutionary, And he may have thought violence was the only way, but a whole Saturn cycle in prison. This converted his understanding to something far different, so that when he emerged, he could really become, at least temporarily, you know, nobody lasts forever in their present form, he could become the father of the nation, and justice could begin to occur for the native people of that land, which had been, in a way, conquered by the Afrikaans, the Dutch, and certainly the British, two colonizing white civilizations or countries had control. And control then was given over under Mandela's overseership to the rightful inhabitants of that country. So what we're learning here is that behind it all, great forces are at work. Forces that we need to assist us, and upon which even today we must rely. We can't imagine that we're doing this all ourselves. Our alignment is crucial. So throughout the month of April, what was it, 25th? Well, the whole thing. And until May 1st, and that includes that 25 to 30 period we've been looking at, the realization of this is a major duty to the support of the forces of enlightenment. I call all today. Now, is it really any different now? We have so much ignorance in the world at the present time. And is the Tibetan not calling still to the support or for the support of the forces of enlightenment? Just think of the rebellion against expertise, expert scientific opinion, the rebellion against this, because people are living out of their solar plexus and fulfilling their fantasies and not thinking of the welfare of the whole. So what is said here 75 years ago, it has great application to the moment as well. As individuals, you must work for an open and receptive mind, free from prejudice or national bias. Every time I hear America First, something in me cringes. It's so isolative, and maybe even the position of the Americas, relative to Europe and Africa and relative to Asia, has, at least in earlier days, contributed to this isolationism. So you must work for an open and receptive mind free from prejudice or national bias. But the lower forces are exerting themselves through the people strictly conditioned by personality, and not even necessarily an integrated personality. As individuals, you need to think in broader terms and of the one world and the one humanity. Let's just pause there for a moment as we, just for a moment, attempt to do that. Think of the world and of the one humanity, country by country. Humanity in manifestation, in incarnation. So many and humanity on the inner planes. And embracing the whole world and all the kingdoms that we can embrace, especially the subhuman kingdoms in relation to whom we have a duty to elevate, even the mineral kingdom. And feel your essence going out and pervading the human kingdom and the subhuman kingdoms, and being pervaded by the kingdom of souls. And if we can touch it, the kingdom of planetary lives. And one day to feel pervaded by the solar kingdom. The highest about which we know anything at the moment, except if we carry the study of the creative hierarchies forward. The mass of right thinking and convinced demand, which you, who seek to serve the Christ, can throw behind the men legislating for the world, can bring great results and can release the forces of enlightenment in a new and potent manner. Well, the legislatures or legislators are legislating. So often we disapprove of what's being done. So often we cannot help but note the selfishness, the sectarianism, the protection of wealth and other prerogatives. The protection of power, even if it means deviating from what is right. And yet, right thinking can permeate these groups. And occasionally it breaks out. And occasionally you find an heroic response. Rare it is. Rare it is. But you find it. I'm thinking of one man who, when faced with a top official who deserved impeachment, actually voted for impeachment. Instead of hewing the party line, which was unjust and cowardly, and which looked away from the facts. Sometimes it just takes one. Principle. To stand on principle. Sometimes it just takes one. Concentration upon the work to be done is of such importance and will call for such practical activities that I write no more at this time. I think it's important simply to have the idea, and the details will be worked out. I desire to keep the immediate issue clear, you know, and not overwhelmed by detail. We will deal later with the forces of reconstruction. That's the Gemini forces. I would like to close this message with some words which I wrote many years ago. They express the needed attitude and orientation. And I do wonder whether they don't apply to us, you know, even now. I ask you to drop your antagonisms and your antipathies, your hatreds and your racial differences, and attempt to think in terms of the one family, the one life, the one humanity. Well, let's read it again. I ask you to drop your antagonisms and your antipathies, your hatreds, and your racial differences, and attempt to think in terms of the one family, a Cancerian thought perhaps, the one life, and the one humanity, an Aquarian necessity. Every day, I think, we should spend just a few minutes breaking out of our preoccupation with the fate of our lower selves and include everybody. Think of the one humanity, and then a very subtle change will occur. And none will be rejected. And even though the personality may be evil, temporarily, or ignorant, there is the, you know, evil of ignorance and the deliberate evil. That's harder to deal with. Even though those things exist, the future also exists, of one human family. So, we'll, you know, we're coming into a new section now, and what, how far are we? Page 468. So, looks like 464 to 468. And 464 to 468. And we're dealing with May 20th, yes, and it's about an hour and, I don't know, hour and 20 minutes, something here. I was granted a little more time and was able to make a little longer program, albeit an odd program in terms of timing, but not odd to study. So I'll put this here, and this would be the end of program 50, and approximately an hour and 20, and 464 to 468. And this would be the 20th of May. And we'll begin with next with program 51. And we don't know how long it will go. And it will be 468. And we don't know what day it will be, whether today or not. But thank you for studying this far. You know, different commentators will emphasize different things. And we all have our limitations, and we all have our scope of knowledge, and we all have limitations on the facts or suppositions which we may find related to each other. And thereby attempt to connect them. I am speaking more slowly. I realize it's not because I'm suffering a lapse in the mind, but I would like it to be easier to follow. And I can remember days when I was racing along. I cannot imagine such things being translated by others in real time. So I'll send this out and it will find its way onto Makara. And I'm grateful for your presence and lots of love and many blessings. And let's really try to fulfill what Master DK says and thus equip ourselves for the new installment, which will round out this, what he calls, series of bridging treatises and equip us to really strengthen the hands of the new group of world servers and of the initiates and of the masters we may in time recognize as having externalized. Our job is to be part of the chain, the supply chain. They talk about it a lot today, but it's the supply chain of spiritual energy. From the very heights, that energy must reach those who are still struggling in the depths, not in full measure, but in some measure, and thus leaven their lives, raise their lives. So many more things are possible than we conceive, and as long as we're in the darkened room, we don't know what it's like to step outside. And it's like one of DK's students, we had to look through a tiny window that's always fogging over. It's not a very attractive sight that we see, nor is it a condition of liberation. So if we do seek liberation, let it be on behalf of humanity and not for some personal satisfaction, which at first may often be the case. Okay, so on to the Easter message next time. And obviously the previous discussion was more in March, perhaps, and Easter Day probably occurred, you know, in the end of March, maybe. Anyway, we looked ahead in the previous article. We looked ahead to WASAC possibilities, and now we're going to be on Easter Day, 1945. It's a bit historical, all this, and I'm not saying I'm the best historian, but I'll share with you what I think I know, or thus I have heard, and you can fill it in with your studies as you go along. Okay, then, we'll see you soon. And this will be sent out to you. Bye-bye.